Well, hello. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is terribly exciting. Judith, are you there in Oxfordshire?
I'm so here in Oxfordshire. Poised, ready, absolutely.
I'm so here in Campbell SE5. And listen, it's kind of party time, Judith, because Daisy, the producer, has just informed us that... What do you tell them?
Would you believe we have reached 1 million listeners, downloads, whatever it is you say?
Yeah, we're not sure how many turned off. We're not sure how many turned off as soon as they started.
Don't
but the
say
fact
that.
Is, the fact is, they clicked on a link. 1 million people at some point over the last. Oh, what is it? It's not quite 2 years.
It's, well, I think it's getting that way, isn't it? But we've been boosted in lockdown. We've been fueled. By rock,
people have got fuck all else to do. Fuck all else to do, Judith.
It's so great, though. Isn't it?
It's really good. It's really good. And everybody is terribly welcome. And stick with us. Because we know stuff. We're going to tell you stuff. And right now, we're going to have a
blow our own trumpets about it. We're going to literally blow our own trumpets.
Well, I'm not blowing a trumpet, Judith. I've created a musical instrument out of household items. So we're going to have the theme tune. Dave's going to cue up the theme tune after Judith has counted us in. Okay. And then we are going to accompany the theme tune with our homemade instruments.
Yes. Okay. Okay. One, two. I like this bit, by the way. I'm really getting into this. One, two. Oh, one, two, three, four.
I can't remember the tune at all. Okay, right, Judith, I'm gonna guess. I think you have to stop now.
We have lost it, by the way.
We might have both chosen the same thing.
Oh, no, I think that's unlikely. My directive to you was, my idea, I should say, very bossy directive, was a homemade wind instrument, and you misunderstood the email I sent yesterday.
I thought it was a joke email when you sent that. When you said, "I think we should use homemade wind instruments," I thought, "Well, that's quite a tall order, Judith," because I'm a windy woman, as we all know. But I'm not musical. I haven't got a musical arse.
Well, there's nothing about me that's musical.
I mean, you know, I've done a few big ones today. A couple of sounded like, you know, World War II, get in your bunker now. But nothing that sounded like our theme tune, I'm sorry to say. So, do you want to guess what my musical instrument was?
Give it me again. Hold on, let me say.
Well, I'm very disappointed in it, because when I was a child growing up in the 60s, this almost counted as something you could play in an orchestra. I'm going to give it a go now.
It sounds as if you're about to be sick.
Well, yeah, if I did it anymore, I would choke and be sick. Right, because what I've done, I've got a comb, Judith.
Oh, you've told me now. I wanted to guess.
I was getting bored already.
So you're playing the comb. You're playing the comb. Yes, but I do remember that was a bit of a thing, wasn't it?
What was your instrument, Judith? What did you make?
Oh, dear. God, I sound like a squeaky toy.
I thought, you know, we're going to be talking about the puppy in the house in a minute, but I thought that it sounded a bit like some puppy business going on.
No, nothing to do with puppy. No, it's to do with, okay, think about your potato crop, onto which we must come, which you sent the hilarious photo of yesterday on the notice board. Think about potato crops and the outside.
Is it a cane? Have you taken a cane?
No.
Have you rolled up some newspaper?
No. What do you have in a greenhouse? What do you have in a greenhouse and a garden?
Well, I don't know.
Water in it.
A watering can?
Yes, I'm playing the watering can very badly.
Is it a plastic one with a big round end with holes in?
Well, no, I had to take that off, otherwise how would I be able to play it?
No, Judith, bear with me now, because I thought that you might be able to fashion a more musical instrument if you had the piece of the watering can, right, with the round bit on with the holes, and then with your fingers you could stop and start the holes like it was a recorder.
Do you know, the thought... thought crossed my mind when I picked up this watering can and took the top off. It sort of did, but it hadn't kind of developed as much as your did. I didn't really think about it in the kind of, you know, like a recorder where you touch some of the holes. I see where you're coming from. I'm going to try at some point the end of the watering can, and I may play it to you.
Okay, right. But I'm not sure you should come back until we've learnt the tune. Actually, do you know what? We've got a listener, Jane with a Y, she's 61, and she has offered Judith, I don't know whether you read this email, it came in last week, and she's offered to learn the Older and Wider theme tune on her ukulele. Now, I don't want to open the floodgates of middle-aged women playing ukuleles any
that
wider.
You just have? I think
as soon as Jane has learned to play this, we must shut the floodgates of the middle-aged female ukulele player. But I think, if Jane manages that, we're going to play it, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. We're totally going to play that. Yeah.
Listen, news of the week, Judith. It's over to you, really. It's over to you and your new baby.
My new baby. Oh, God. Your new baby. When you said that just then. Yes.
Did your womb flip?
Probably did. I mean, so at the weekend, as you know, we went to meet the puppy. We had half an hour of puppy time. We were allowed contact time with the puppy. Well, I went to this breeder's house. Do you know what? It wasn't what I was expecting. You know, okay, I was thinking, you know, because she's very, 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 very top-hole kind of breeder, you know. I mean, she's kind of bossy and she's, you know, she knows
I've got posh
doing.
Bungalow in my head.
Have you? Interesting. I and Mike, we didn't talk about this, but I think both of us in our heads, we've got horse boxes. We've got four-wheel drive. We've got gravel. We've got, you know, we've got quite a lot of sort of rural stuff going on generally. So
basically, Judith, did you want to be adopting your puppy from somewhere quite posh?
I think I probably did deep down inside.
You wanted it to come from a good home.
I'm ashamed of myself, actually, you know, because obviously you do what you do, you put the postcode in, it was like, oh God, it took ages to get there. It's middle of this sort of flat bit of kind of Peterborough or something near Peterborough, anyway. And so we thought, oh, really? This is a bit strange, isn't it? So, it was kind of a very, very strange road. And I don't even know whether she lives there, but there was nothing rural about it at all. And oh my God, the smell when you open the door. I mean, it's a dog breeder's house, isn't it? So it's got to, you know, but I like the smell of dog. I mean, I do like the smell of dog, but in very, very small doses. But it was like a, whoa,
a dog. God. A dog shouldn't smell, though. Isn't it like fish shops? That if it's clean and everything's fresh, it shouldn't smell.
Well, you've never had a dog, have you? I mean, dogs do smell a bit.
But,
and certainly
Judith,
wet dog,
sorry
you know,
to interrupt. Right. I haven't had a dog. Yes. I haven't had a dog, okay. But I've had a wet blazer.
What do you mean a wet blazer?
A wet school blazer smells of dogs.
Absolutely. Yes, you could be right. You could be right. So smell, quite difficult. Actual house, bit difficult. A yard full of these dogs, very well behaved, I have to say. Could see why she's a bossy champion breeder. Really, you know, like all... Yeah, not too much barking either. But anyway, the sort of the context of you know, was quite difficult to deal with. But then, Jenny, then she went to get her. She went to get her.
Where were you sitting? Were you outside?
No, we were inside, but then we had to go and sit outside in the sort of yard. Yeah. You know. But basically, no, I mean, I remember it's like when they handed me Sienna or Ellen, you know, when you've just given birth. That moment, I mean, it's terrible, ashamed of myself that it's like this, but the moment that she came out with it and I took, you know, sort of, I saw her walk over towards me and her little face, and she gave it to me. And honestly, I think I said things like this, Jenny, and I'm ashamed of myself,
Jesus,
I think.
No. Oh, God, go on. Go on, Judith, what you said.
I'm going to have to rein myself, but it was like... Oh, little darling, oh, George, you are so cool. Yeah, I mean, it was you are
but
so
Judith,
beautiful.
I love her. But I know you're saying that out loud, but in your head, were you thinking those thoughts or were you actually going, Jesus, what have I done? Because that is exactly what happened to me when they gave me Phoebe when she'd just been born. In my mouth and out of my mouth, I was saying all the right words. I was saying, oh, my daughter, oh, I love you, oh. And in my head, I was going, Jesus Christ, what have I done? Wait, my God.
Because you struggled at the beginning, didn't you?
I just wanted to run 100 miles. Yeah, if I'd been physically capable of getting out of that bed and scarpering into the night, I'd have gone.
Would you really?
Yeah.
Gosh. God, that's very honest of you to say, and I know how besotted you are with BB now.
Well, it got better.
Well, just a bit.
No, it isn't what's just coming out of my mouth. No, I genuinely had a physical sort of, you just
was it visceral?
My womb. Well, I think it was. Oh. I mean, I genuinely think it was, you know, and I just, and now I'm just thinking of her and kind of how she felt in my arms and how she smelt and her little, you know, the top of her head and her little ears are all so shiny. And honestly, I would have liked to have sort of smuggled her away and brought her back straight away.
So why couldn't you? Because I thought you love her. Okay, you love her for now because she hasn't pissed on your carpet yet or shat anywhere that you can't find, but you can vaguely smell it. It's a very shiny dog. She's a very shiny dog. I've seen the photo on our older and wider Instagram notice board. She's shiny, but her eyes weren't open. Will she open her eyes, or are they glued down?
It was just a bad photograph. But no, she had her eyes open. But she's very. I think she apparently is the sort of quietest of the litter. She's the most the least needy according to the breeder, which is great. You know, so potentially less mad. And she was just very, very, very content to be in my arms.
Did she snuggle into your bosom?
Oh, she did. She did. I am honestly totally in love. I keep thinking about her.
And why did you call her Poppy? Was it instantly as soon as you saw her you thought she's Poppy?
Well, no, Ellen thought about Poppy, and then I'd independently thought about Poppy, and then the woman said that when she comes out, you know, with her food or whatever, she shouts, puppy, puppy, puppy. So actually we sort of thought, oh, that probably makes a bit of sense. But kind of, you know, sexistly, I think a girl dog, needs to end in a sort of Y. I mean, that's very sexist, isn't it? But and actually the girls used to call my dad Poppy. It was a sort of affectionate thing.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Okay, okay. That's all. I like the name. So you're still buying it presents and jumpsuits and little, you know, cashmere throws and stuff like that.
It's a bit like going to John. I mean, you know that phase. You remember that phase? It's terribly middle class. But did you have a phase before Phoebe was born where you went to John Lewis and you kind of had a whole list, like a wedding list? They did probably still do, a whole kind of maternity list that they didn't sort of activate until...
No,
sort of
Judith,
safely
I did
delivered.
Not go into John Lewis because I was 28, and I don't think I went into John Lewis until I was in my 30s. I didn't.
Is that right?
I went to Mother Care.
Oh,
there was a Mother Care in Peckham that I got most of my stuff from. I think though we might have got the pram from somewhere proper and posh, but I didn't understand the joys of Peter Jones or John Lewis until I was a bit older.
Yeah,
I was quite a young mother. I was, I was still a bit of a punk rocker. Didn't know what I was doing. It was terrifying.
You wouldn't have been seen dead in bloody John Lewis, would you?
No, not at that age.
Let alone middle age. Let alone enjoying the haberdashery department, you probably didn't even know what the bloody thing was.
I wouldn't have known where it was, but now, God. You know, I'm really glad I've paced myself because there's so much I'm enjoying now that I didn't allow myself to enjoy when I was a younger woman.
Absolutely.
So what are you buying the dog?
It's a very, very long list. So I've got the crates organised, and actually I'm going shopping with Sienna tonight. It is a little bit like going to a sort of maternity, you know, mother care, isn't it? So we're looking for treats to buy, and little toys and squeaky things and a collar, and it was a massive, massive. Already
did you meet her brothers and sisters? How many is she how many siblings has she got?
I think she's got 7 siblings, and we met the mum and the dad, and haven't washed my jumper since I brought it back because it still smells of her. Do you think do you know what? I think I might actually start to. Well, no, I think I might need to rein myself in a bit, Jenny.
I will tell you, Judith, but the trouble is, I'm not seeing you face to face. And if I get a whiff of you, the first time I see you and you smell like some mad dog woman, I will have to tell you. I mean, my worst fears that I turn up to surprise you and you stink to high heaven of dog and you've got a ukulele under your arm. And then I'm just going to have to say, I'll come back another day. Anyway, I know I'm delighted for you because I know that last week, between you and me, you were getting a bit anxious about the arrival of the dog. And I think you needed, you needed the physical reality of holding her to actually sort of... Because I had a doggy visit as well. I had the family over. Oh, God, that's exhausting, isn't it? Oh, I don't know. Can we go back into lockdown? Fall down lockdown, thanks very much. No, it was delightful. But
how many people came? How many?
There were nine of us. There were nine of us for lunch. God. My brother and my niece weren't there because they'd had to go to Durham to get all her stuff out of her halls of residence and move it into a house share that she's going to be living in from September onwards. Hopefully, you know,
I remember that phase.
Yeah,
you?
Yeah. You know, you do the first. Well, I never went into halls of residence because, of course, I refused. So I spent my first year at drama school. I was such an idiot, Judith. I really just thought I knew everything and I knew fuck all. And so I went to drama school, right? And I got my place. And because I'm lazy, I'm really lazy. I've got problems. And my mother at that time sort of started getting odd illnesses. You know, she was either having a cyst removed or a kidney came out, or, you know, she had quite dramatic illnesses now and again.
Yes, yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah, I was kind of left to my own devices to find somewhere to live. And I just didn't do it, Judith. I just didn't get on with it.
Well, wait, hold on. I've forgotten where you were.
I went to Manchester Polytechnic School of Theatre. It was a drama school, proper sort of accredited drama school in those days. And it was in Didsbury. And anyway, I was talking to my friend Janet Billing, who lived next door but three. And I said, I'm going in like a month, but I haven't got anywhere to live. And she said, well, that's absolutely ridiculous, because she was very organised and she was going to art school and she had everything sorted out. So she said, right, we are going to... And I have no recollection how we did it, how we found somewhere, because, you know, there's no internet. I don't know whether we phoned the college, whether they sent us a list of... Basically, in the end, it was more or less digs that I ended up in. It was... instead of going to halls of residence and being surrounded by loads of people of my age and living sort of, you know, near the drama school.
Campus. Or,
yeah, well, it wasn't a campus. It wasn't that kind of thing. It was actually in an old cinema. Drama school. It was really nice. So it was just the cinema, this old cinema and a pub, and that was about it. But so if you wanted to be in a halls of residence, you were part of the, you know, the other Manchester universities and colleges and stuff like that. Anyway, I ended up renting this room, and it wasn't even a room of my own, Judith. I had to share it with a girl that I had no idea who she was going to be. It was the only thing left. Me and my friend Janet Billing, we went to Manchester to look at this place. Literally, it was the last one on the list.
Oh, my God, Jenny.
It was this old woman, and she had this room, this double bedroom, in her 1930s semi. It was small, right? And the bedroom had two single beds in it. She said, you'll be in that one, and whoever takes that one will be in that one.
Cossie, you didn't even know who was going to share your room.
No, no.
Good grief, Jenny.
And I kind of didn't want to upset my mum and dad by saying, you know, I've fucked this up. I made a terrible mistake. Because, you know, my sister had done it properly, and she'd gone to King's and been in halls of residence for the first year, then found a flat with a load of girls and, you know, lived in one of those kind of sitcom lives in the late 70s. And there was me, and I got this dreadful double bedroom and it didn't have a kitchen. The kitchen was in a tiny converted other bedroom, which had... It had a vanity unit for a kitchen
Jenny.
Sink and a baby belling.
Fed up. You must have been terribly homesick.
Well, no, because I found cider and boys were in Manchester, and that was all right. And then I had this lucky stroke, and I don't really know whether I should. I always felt at some time, Judith, that when I was gigging around the country, that she'd turn up one day, and she was the girl that turned up to share this bedroom with me. And her name is Julie Gilvery. And she was a butcher's daughter from Sheffield. And
Was she doing drama like you? Was she doing the same course?
No, she was doing textiles and sewing. She was doing pattern design and all that in another bit of the Manchester colleges and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So when my mum and dad dropped me off, right, you know, they take you to your place, and my mother looked a bit horrified because, you know,
it
wasn't.
She did.
It was just a house in the middle of a housing estate by
Jenny.
A sort of recreation ground. It was absolutely nowhere near anything. And anyway, this girl came in and she had a bottle of martini under one arm. And I thought, it's okay, she's okay, she's going to be fine, we're going to be friends. And we were really good friends.
Thank God.
I know.
That was a close shave, though, wasn't it?
It was, oh God, it was dreadful. I can't tell you how dreadful the whole thing was. But we still tried to smuggle boys in. It was ridiculous. This old woman slept next door. It's like living with your nana. Anyway, where did you live when you first went to?
Oh, I went into a hotel. As you were saying, all that, lots of things were coming back to me that I hadn't thought about in absolute years. I started at Essex University and then I sort of transferred to Leeds because I had a boyfriend at Leeds. And so I started, obviously I got things organised, you know, bloody for months. Of course I had. So in one of those things where you share a kitchen, you know, and there's about sort of 20 of you and you all have a little cubby hole and all that. And I was so, you know, I met people from the south and terribly posh people. I remember there's one girl from Gerrard's Cross who's terribly, terribly trendy and very posh. Never met anybody posh before. That was all very, you know, disconcerting. But I do remember there was a woman called Ruth, and we used to sort of, all the girls used to sort of kind of gather around her single bed because we had these sort of horrible capsule rooms with all exactly the same sort of fittings and everything. And she was an ex-nurse, I remember. And she used to tell us about orgasms, how to have an orgasm. Yeah. She used to give lessons on that. It was like right,
was
come in,
student?
Everybody.
Was she a student? Come.
Yeah, she was a student. Yeah, she was a student. Yeah. She was an ex-nurse. And she used to tell us, it was like a bedtime story. I'm just all coming back to me. We always sit around with our little mugs, you know, we'll tell us about that, Ruth. Yeah. And she used to tell us about the things people used to get stuck up their vaginas in casualty. Because she was, it was all that. And basically how to have an orgasm. It was like, oh, yeah, okay. And then what you do? All right, okay.
How fantastic.
I know. It was all very useful. Much more useful than the lessons we were doing. Much more useful.
Ruth. We got sidetracked. I was telling you about meeting Enzo. So my brother wasn't at this lunch, but the rest of my brother and my niece weren't at this lunch, but his wife and my nephew were, and then my sister and her son, his girlfriend, and Phoebe and Tristram and all that kind of thing. And we opened all the doors to the back garden, so it was very well ventilated.
Oh, very good. Very good.
And everyone was sort of, there was no hugging or touching, but we were in the same room, but it was all very open plan. Anyway, my sister-in-law, Penny, bought their little puppy whippet, Enzo, who I have to say, Judith, I mean, he's a lovely dog. And I just wondered whether maybe he and Poppy, when they're a bit older, not now, because it'd be disgusting, they could have sex and make some extraordinary babies.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know
idea.
What the mix would be. So spaniel and whippet. So, you know, a spappet or a spippet or something like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's cappuccino coloured and it's very smooth haired and it's got a gentle
gorgeous.
Face and very, gorgeous. Very liquid brown eyes. And it's slightly inquisitive, but a little bit nervous as well. And just a very nice natured. Because my brother used to have this dog, and I hope he never hears this, because he would come round with a spade. But he had this dog called Burst. It was a whippet. It had no personality whatsoever. But apparently, Enzo comes from a show business background.
You see, I'm already thinking, now, do I want Poppy to be, you know, to be mated? I'm actually thinking like a parent. Okay, right. What were the
not
parents
sure,
like?
You know,
what did his father do?
Yeah, well, Enzo's a bit gay anyway. I don't know whether Enzo will ever be interested in lady dogs. But he comes from a theatrical background in so much that some of his four doggies, grandparents, Crufts show dogs and things like that. They're show dogs.
Nice. I'm liking the sound of that.
Yes. So anyway, I had the family lunch. And when I was preparing for the family lunch, I thought of you because I could only find 5 matching napkins. I thought, I'm 60-year-old. I'll say
tut,
that again.
Tut.
I know, I'm 60
tut
years
and tut.
Old.
No, I think you need to. Yeah, you need to get down, John Lewis, and get yourself some decent napkins.
Well, now that I'm of an age, do you know what? I put my napkin shortage on Twitter, and this woman tweeted back. I loved this tweet. She said that she was given a table runner one Christmas, but she thought it was a scarf, and she wore it for years.
I know what she means. They're crazy on those, aren't they, in the States? They are completely pointless. What? Yeah, I mean, even I mean, you know what I'm like for soft furnishings. Even I don't really get table runners. But maybe
and then someone
like
else
them.
Tweeted me, and she said that her mother was bought a set of placemats. I think they were just linen ones, you know, those quite floppy ones.
Oh,
and
yes.
And she used them for years as antimacassars. You see, your table linen is actually quite versatile. Anyway, the very sad thing, I'm going to finish off about Enzo, the lovely little puppy. The very sad thing was that it took to Jeff, right, this tiny little sort of delicate, beautifully coloured little whippet thing. It immediately zoned in on Jeff. Immediately.
Did it?
Yeah, it did. And I could see him. And I thought, this is interesting. And he was sort of, you know, picking it up, nuzzling it and, like, you know, doing all that. And then he started sneezing.
Oh, bugger.
Yeah.
That's your puppy.
Because, you know, he's a bit
that's
allergy.
Your puppy gone for a Burton, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think so. And I thought, you know, even with a smooth-haired one, I thought, is he putting this on because he knows I've got a bit of a dachshund fantasy thing going on? But I think, you know, his eyes were streaming and all this kind of thing, and he started maniling, you know, antihistamines. So I think I'm out of luck there anyway.
I think you are, really. I think you are, yeah.
But Saturday, of course, when we were having a family lunch and you were doing a puppy meeting.
Puppies. Yes, yes.
It was the official forget the plague, let's go to the pub day. Did you go to the pub?
No, of course I didn't go to the pub. Do you know what? I think as I've got older, I've realised how much I don't like pubs. And it's taken me ages and ages to realise that actually I don't really like them.
They're awful. I don't like anywhere that I can't sit down. I don't like anywhere I can't hear myself speak. I don't like anywhere that sells me extortionately priced wine that tastes disgusting and gives me a hangover. I can't. And I look around and I think, oh, dear. I mean, the only time you really want a pub is when it's snowing and you've hired a country cottage in a village.
Oh, yes. Yes,
and
yes,
you can walk to a country pub that has a blazing fire.
Yes.
And only about six people ever come in. And there's a
fabulous
menu.
And a nice steak
menu.
And kidney pie. And a nice steak and kidney pie. Not
without
too expensive. No no fuss. Not fussy food. Not pretentious. And some real ale. I'm with you on that. My heart sinks if people say, would you like another round? Apart from anything else, I mean, God, have you bought a round lately?
Ah, don't put my hand
Jesus.
In my purse. Jesus,
I remember doing it in Edinburgh.
No, I go to the toilet when it's my hand. No, I've got a hip flask. I'm not doing that. Ridiculous.
They cost so much money. The last time I bought a round, which honestly is quite a long time, I got out like £10. I had to get out another 20.
Yeah,
it's like,
the trouble with you and I, we're still living in 1970s currency, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't think anything should cost more than £12.
No. I mean, our local pub is very not. But you know, it's everything just costs so much money. But you know, but the other thing is, to be honest, I'm fine for one drink. It's like this is how I'm getting now. I'm fine for one drink of being sociable, but then after that, I think, well, that's fine. But you know, I'd like to be on the sofa watching Mad Men. You know, with a bit of apricot crumble that I know is in the fridge that's left over. That's really where I am.
Absolutely,
God,
I'm with
bloody
you.
Hell.
But I didn't go Sinking Pints on Saturday because Judith had to work on Sunday. I had my first telly back in the telly studio.
I noticed.
And it was, do you know what? I could have cried when I got in that studio. I was so glad. I was so glad to be in a very familiar environment that I recognised and it sort of felt like another home, and the cameramen were all there. I mean, there weren't as many people as you'd normally have.
So how was it different? Yeah.
Hugely different. Yeah. Okay.
Well, go on.
So I get to the studio, Judith, and the first person I meet is a paramedic.
Oh.
And she's in green, you know, like a proper one. And she comes out and she said, you know, before you're taken through, we just have to check your temperature. And I sort of opened my mouth and I thought, well, I hope she's not going to stick it up my bum, you know. Which way? Where's she going to put the thermometer? She said, no, we don't do it like that. Stand here. And it's like it's an automated thermometer thing. So
Gosh.
It kind of centres at your head and then a red bleep goes and it takes your temperature.
Wow. Wow.
And I passed.
Would you like one of those, put a portable one of those to shine at people? That would be quite
good.
Well,
I just think, you know, before you leave your house, before you go into the supermarket, just, you know, there you go.
God, that's impressive, isn't it?
It was really impressive.
Very seriously.
Yeah.
Right.
So that, and then, no hair, no makeup, as was evident on the screen. And then I was taken up. It was just basically, I had to mic myself up. It was a very DIY TV thing. But once you were actually on the set, I wasn't snuggled up to the presenters. Obviously, there was at least, I think it was about 2 metres between us all. But it was very nice. And I was plugging the older and wider Survivor's Guide to the Menopause book.
Yeah.
And obviously, they're two young men. So, you know, some of it went a bit above their heads.
I didn't watch it all, but I watched a bit of it. And I watched the bit where you were talking about getting, you know, the anger that sort of comes with the menopause. And they did look quite frightened of you, Jenny.
Bless.
Two of them. I mean, what are they, in their 30s? About in their 30s, do you think?
They might be in their 40s, because one of them's 40s. Early 40s. I mean, the thing is, Judith, we're getting so old that we look at men in their 40s and think they're 12.
They both had,
children at college, that are college age and all that sort of thing.
Bloody hell.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
I think you did well. I mean,
I had a lovely time.
Yeah. No, I think you did very well. Would you have preferred it if you'd had a sort of woman interviewer? Because they did.
No, I don't think so, because I don't think you can do that. I think that, you know, men have got to be part of this as much as, because we are half the population. They've got to live with us. So they've got to kind of brace themselves
for what's to
come, you know, if they're going to be living with a woman. I basically said, you know, if you've ever lived with a woman of, who's fertile and doing that. I didn't know whether I was allowed to say periods on a Sunday morning. I said, it's a bit like PMT, but it just doesn't stop. And that's when one of them started blinking quite hard. But what was interesting on that programme was that one of the presenters admitted, and apparently this has been quite a thing and I wasn't aware of it, he's called Tim Lovejoy, and he admitted that he'd found lockdown incredibly hard and that it had really, really severely mentally affected him. He'd been stuck with 3 children, older teenagers and a 7-year-old. And how incredibly hard this has been for so many people. I'm finding the new normal not good enough, actually. This is where I am now and again catching myself feeling very, very low indeed.
But yes, I think this sort of despondency is kind of starting to creep in with me a bit, really. I don't know where the end of it is. That's the thing. I mean, we don't know, do we?
I'm hugely relieved that there's been, you know, a rescue package for the arts, but whether it's going to be enough, how they're going to share it out. I mean, it's that sort of the enormity of that problem is what really kind of makes me feel a bit vertiginous. I know how difficult the problem with theatre is. And I'm too frightened to get on a plane. So whether I'd go to the theatre myself, I don't know. And I've also had another exciting thing that a few weeks ago we wouldn't have been allowed to do. When I had publication day last Thursday for the book, I gave myself the afternoon off and I met a girlfriend of mine in Dulwich Park. She's a young girl. I did panto with her about 10 years ago. And she's got girl-boy twins, which is fascinating. I mean, it's really interesting to watch the dynamic of a pair of twins in a park. And we went out on a pedalo, because that's new as well, because the pedalos have been under wraps for ages.
I like a pedalo. I'm fond of a pedalo.
Oh, I love the way you can go backwards as well. You can go forwards, you can go backwards.
Yes.
I was really in my element here. I don't know what you're like with small children, but I have never felt more like my father. I just turned into my dad. I was on this pedalo and I was singing rude songs. And
singing rude songs?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, sort of songs about all these ducks and hens that were all around. Well, not hens, they were just ducks.
What, were you making them up, or do you remember your dad singing them?
It was me making them. Hey, fat ducky, fat ducky, you're the fattest ducky I ever did see. And the little girl, because there's a girl one and a boy one, the little girl loved all the singing and really laughing at calling a duck fat. She thought that was hilarious. And then for the boy, because he wasn't that impressed by the singing, I did crashing. I did crashing for him. He loved it.
What, crashing your pedalo?
Yeah, crashing the pedalo into teenagers.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, that was my best thing.
Bloody hell, I'm impressed. So, God, you really did go down well. I'm very impressed. I would have thought you'd be too risk-averse.
No, not on a pedalo, Judith, and I can swim, so I knew I was safe.
I would be too risk-averse. What are you like on a dodgem? Are you the sort of person
I think they're dangerous.
People?
No, dodgems, I think they're whiplash. They've got a very high risk of neck injury, the dodgem.
Well, I'm not surprised. I remember on Grumpy Old Women, we did a sequence about, you know, the fact that you get really sort of frightened of everything when you get older. And we filmed at the Hoppings, which is my idea of hell in Newcastle, a travelling fair. And so we filmed a sequence at the Dodgers. It still makes me laugh when I think about it. And so instead of, you know, doing all the whizzing about, I just hogged the side, just went round the edge.
Cruising round the edge.
Yes. Like, oh, God, when's it going to stop? That says it all, doesn't it, really, about women of our age.
Right, Judith, it's time for our culture roundup of the week. Now, you've done some homework, haven't you? There was somebody recommended something last week and you actually sat down and watched it.
I did. Well, of course, I take the gang's recommendations very, very seriously. Somebody said that we should watch Days of the Bagnold Summer, that it was a feature film that we would really like and would speak to us. So I did that very thing. It was good. I enjoyed it very much. It was really about a middle-aged woman whose teenage son, they were sort of stuck together over one summer, really. He was supposed to go away and he didn't go away, and it was kind of, you know, them starting to get on as adults, really. It's lovely. It's kind of gentle, but sort of affectionate.
It's a good, I haven't seen that scenario before as well. It's a good dynamic, isn't it? The mother-son, which I think is a really difficult thing when you're a middle-aged woman, to find common ground with a teenage son. And I think that it's a good thing to watch now, because in lockdown, there will be single parents, you know, mothers having to deal with teenage sons in the house. And, you know, having to find something that you can share, hopefully. I mean, because in the past, teenage boys just go out, don't they?
So it's a wonderful sequence where she says, well, I think you should try and get a summer job. You know, why don't you take your CV around to various places? And he kind of, all right. And then he does that. And then there's a sequence where he just goes into a series of shops wearing the most ridiculous sort of outfit, like, you know, so off-putting. And he goes to stupid places like kind of boutiques, like really, really fancy ladies' boutiques, like they're going to give him a job. And
and that is so teenage boy, isn't it? Because teenage boys just kind of live on another planet.
Yeah, it is. There were little touches like that, which was obviously like, I'm doing as she's told me to do, but I'm not giving it any thought at all.
Well, that obviously is a very clever recommendation. And just repeat the title again, Judith, because I'm going to write it down if I have time.
Yeah, it's called Days of the Bagnold Summer. And she's called Sue Bagnold.
So it's a family called Bagnold.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, no, it's good fun. Good fun.
And now, there's a really interesting thing. I'm going to recommend something just on your computer. Just have a look, or your phone. And this is the Bodyform womb film. Have you heard about this?
Well, I hadn't heard of it, and when you mentioned it yesterday on the email, I played it, and it's a really moving. Anyway, you go and tell the gang about it. It's good.
Well, I've only watched it once, but I think it's worth just, you know, Googling Bodyform film. It's only a couple of minutes long. It's got a really good soundtrack. And it's a mix of cartoons. So there's the inside of a woman's reproductive system, basically, ovaries and all that. You know, I'm still a bit confused. I should know more about this. But and then it's intercut with real women experiencing things, you know, that period pains, well, probably endometriosis, coming on at school, the menopause. There's an awful miscarriage story, but it comes good in the end. It encapsulates, you know, a woman's nether regions throughout her life, really, what is going on inside you. And so it's really clever sympathetic look at, you know, what we all go through. And I just think that I don't know why they've made it, but I'm really glad they have. I think it's important.
Yeah, no, it is. It's lovely.
I'm also still enjoying Magpie Lane, which I think is a great book club book. And I've got Demi Moore's autobiography on the go for the shared nighttime story. Mm-hmm. And she's got into her huge cocaine habit at the moment. So I'm really enjoying that. And I've got a young adult fiction for the bath because, you know, my eyes are difficult for reading print, but it's okay. It's easier in the bath because my eyes get steamed.
This is an actual book that you read in the bath.
It's an actual book that I'm reading with my actual eyes. And it was long listed for the Women's Prize, and it's called Red at the Bone. And because I wanted to read more black female writers because I don't think I make enough effort. And this is the ideal kind of, if you haven't dipped your toe into enough black female writing, then start here because it's a young adult fiction. But it's a beautifully written novella, really, because it's only 160 pages of really beautiful writing from a woman called Jacqueline Woodson. And it's a very small, very neatly stitched patchwork quilt of a black family's backstory, which begins with the 16th coming of age party in 2001, but loops back to the massacres in Tulsa in 1921, which I had to Google, and it was an appalling incident when white residents of Tulsa were basically given the permission to attack their black neighbours and torch their properties. So it's about colour and class, sex, mistakes, ambition, gentrification, all told by members of the same family. I'm really enjoying it. It's very pared down, but it's also very intense. So it's like a brandy rather than a lager, if you know what I mean.
Sounds good. Sounds good. I'm still reading Grown Ups by Marion Keyes, but do you know what, though? I don't know whether you remember this sequence or passage, was where she's got obviously got a problem with food, hasn't she?
And one of the characters, one of the female characters,
And she sees some Easter eggs and she sort of talks you through that sort of thought process, which I don't know whether you've ever got, of kind of thinking, oh God, I really mustn't, I really won't, and I'm not going to, oh, but I might, and oh, yes, I will. And that sort of, all that, you know, the texture of opening the silver and the kind of cracking of the chocolate, almost like it's
a sexual thing.
She
takes you through a binge, really, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. That's exactly right. She takes you through this binge and she's had one and she might as well have another one, and do you know what? I might have another one still, and actually there's another chocolate bar there, and it's
orgy of chocolate eating, and then the come down afterwards and the realization that she's got to replace things and all this sort of thing, which involves getting into a car. And I think that book is extraordinary because it not only does it touch on some real nerves for a lot of women, but it's also got some of the funniest passages that I've read in years. Proper laugh out loud funny, which is incredibly hard to pull off in a novel. And I really think Marion Keyes, you know, deserves medals for everything she does. She's not only a wonderful woman, she writes like a dream. And all those characters in that book are all relatable. I think it's a wonderful book. I really do. And now, so TV-wise, we're on to telly now. Still very deep in The Sopranos, but I think series 4 might be the weakest. And we're on series 4. Very funny email from one of our listeners, Joe57, proud gang member, who's also been watching The Sopranos, who has noticed that our lead married couple, Tony and Carmela Soprano, have had the same bed linen for all four seasons. Oh, Joe, that is an excellent older and wider observation there, Joe. She's not watching it for the storyline, for the, you know, the gangland killings and all that kind of thing. She's like, oh, look at that. Carmela, really? You haven't changed your bedclothes for years on end. I mean, it is the most extraordinary thing. And it's very, once you notice it, you can't stop noticing it.
Excellent observation. Excellent.
Now, we're getting on to the emails, Judith. We've had some anti-rolling panty advice from Sandy, who's discovered sloggy double comfort tie knickers. That's T-A-I knickers, which she said should be renamed Goldilocks knickers, as they're not too high, not too low, and the waistband is strictly non-roll.
Count us in for those. Yeah. Bloody good.
She also said that she's got her 36-year-old daughter hooked on our podcast and that it got her through a tricky labour.
Oh, that's nice. We've got
imagine
some younger
that.
Listeners. Get
imagine
us. Get us. And guess what? Somebody said they'd like to buy my painting of the oranges that I put on what I put on the Instagram.
Furious when I read that, absolutely. And some bile came up in my throat. I really had to choke it down. I just thought, hold on here, hold on here. I posted 70 artworks over lockdown on my Twitter feed. Nobody offered to buy what, you know, even one of the fuckers. And you've got your, it was your oranges, wasn't it? Your oil oranges.
Yeah. Hit the spot, that did.
Listen, we've got, we have to get move on. We have things to do.
But when are you going to have the two potatoes that are you at the sum total?
We had
them
last night,
crop?
Judith.
Oh, you've eaten them? Yeah. And?
Well, we had some other potatoes that I was cooking. I do sometimes do baby new potatoes, but I bake them. It's a little bit of oil, you know, so you just put them in the oven for 40 minutes.
Yes.
Delicious. And these two stood out. Honestly, they really did.
Of course they did.
We marked them up in the dish, so we knew which ones they were. Taste sensation, absolutely. So, yeah, we're farmers now. We're the Camberwell farmers.
Oh, of course you are. Getting the wellies
musicians,
next.
Farmers. We will... well, what we'll do now is we'll play out with a theme tune, and we would encourage you at this point to pick up something you can blow into or shake and maybe have your own little music moment. So, Judith, I will love you and leave you and hope you have a great week, and I look forward to talking to you again this time next week. So
absolutely.
Goodbye, everybody. Yeah. Take care. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Toodle pip.
Hello, Jenny here. Just a quick PS. If you're interested, Little Lifetimes, the 15-minute monologue series that I wrote, are still available on Sounds and also still live, BBC Radio 4 on Wednesday nights at 11 o'clock. Much easier to listen on Sounds at a reasonable hour of the day. And I'd also like to plug Older and Wider, A Survivor's Guide to the Menopause, which is available from all good bookshops and online right now. Various prices. Try and get yourself a good deal. Cheers all. Bye.